following program has been brought to you by Barterhouse Wines.
Well, I think part of the sourcing process to me is the most exciting, because you know, you rent a car and you drive through the south of France, and you know, you obviously have some appointments set up, but you know, some of the most exciting things happen when you're just kind of winging it. And you meet a farmer at, you know, a wine fair, and he says, "Well, come back to my estate," and you're not quite sure where you're going, and you follow a guy in a Peugeot, you know, up a rambling hill, and all of a sudden you come across either a castle or like a shack in the woods, and the guy's making wine out of the back of his, you know, house, or he could be making wine out of a major estate. You know, looks are deceiving, but you want to assume that someone with a very established chateau is making good wine. But 9 times out of 10, the guy out of the garage who's like super passionate is making these better wines, and they're maybe more rustic and less polished. So to me, like the restaurateur, the sommelier, this story resonates with them about the small farmer, you know, the guy who's making wine on small quantities, 80 cases, 100 cases. Those are the things exciting to Barterhouse, and hopefully the things exciting to our clients.
Happy Monday to everybody out there, and welcome to the baddest episode of Cutting the Curd that there ever was. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby. My co-host is Sophie Schlesinger, and today we are talking the state of cheese in Pennsylvania.
Ooh, yeah.
Traveling to the West, the longest state if you're ever driving from New York to Chicago.
Right.
So we are going to be talking with Jay Montgomery from Calkins Creamery, Trent Hendricks from Hendricks Farm, and hopefully learning what cup cheese is all about.
Right.
That's a strange one that Sophie found in her research.
Wikipedia is still a little unsure, I think, of what it is exactly.
I think we can maybe after the show, hopefully we could update it and become like you know, the Wikipedia source.
Yeah, hopefully we won't get edited.
Yeah. So our first guest, like I said, is Jay Montgomery from Calkins Creamery. They make a range of really, really fantastic cheeses that I'm very proud to sell. Jay, are you with us?
I am. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. Thanks so much for being on the show.
No problem.
So maybe we can start off with a bit of history about Calkins Creamery, because you guys are a really, really well-established dairy farm.
Oh, I appreciate it. I can tell you a little bit about the farm and the creamery. You know, we're actually a family farm first, and today we're on our 6th generation back on the farm.
Wow.
And this is my wife's family, the Bryants. They started on this farm in, I think, 1841, when people came down from, my father always tells me, Connecticut, and started clearing land and started farming.
And were they, what was their descent, or what was their descent? Are they from?
Wales.
Wales, okay.
Yeah, Welsh family.
Okay. And so they established the farm there. And was it always a dairy farm, or has that evolved?
Hard time hearing you, and there's a loud buzzing.
Oh, okay.
That's better.
Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay, great. I was asking if the farm was always a dairy farm, or if that sort of evolved over time.
You know, it was always a dairy farm. From what I've heard, there was a period where there were some sheep, maybe 60 years ago. But primarily, it's always been registered Holstein cattle.
Okay. And was that typical of the area where you guys are located? Were there many dairy farms in your area?
Yeah, there were. You know, I think as recently as 10 years ago, we probably had over 200 in our county.
Wow.
That number's changed quite a bit since then, as you can imagine, but...
Absolutely. And so what was the motivation for you and Emily to come back to the family farm?
Well, it was kind of a basket of causes. We had a barn fire in 2002, I think, And when her father and mother and brother decided to rebuild the barn and the farm under those economic conditions, we thought, well, maybe there's something we can do to help. And, you know, Emily is a trained food scientist with a strong food safety background. And I've worked in engineering in the food industry for a while, so we thought, well, this is something we can do.
Yeah, wow, that's incredible. So, I mean, I feel like one of the most fascinating things about all of America's sort of farmstead cheesemakers is the fact that they've come from such different backgrounds. It's very rare to find somebody who was a born, you know, dairy farmer making cheese. So can you talk a little bit about how your backgrounds kind of have come to be super useful now that you're making cheese?
Yeah, I mean, mainly Emily. Emily's the brains behind the whole operation. I mean, what we've asked her to do is a very tall task. You know, going from never making cheese ever to, you know, running your own creamery, and especially when you start out, try not to scrap anything because, you know, your cash flow is so difficult when you're starting. But Emily's background in food science was an asset then, it's an asset now, and it's going to be more of an asset in the future, especially as there's more and more talk of food safety. And, you know, we do make cheese with raw milk here on our farm.
Mm-hmm.
So we realize the importance of a good environmental surveillance program, you know, firewall between, you know, the farm and the creamery, you know, those just basic things. And then she can take it to the next level with her background.
That's really, I feel like that's invaluable. I definitely wanted to ask you more about that because I feel like, especially in the past year or so, there's been so much more scrutiny of small cheese producers. So yeah, what kind of best practices, if you had to name maybe five, you know, that you could share with our listeners, maybe there are other cheesemakers listening in that could benefit from that.
Well, I think the number one thing you've got to do, and I think she would agree, is restrict foot traffic. You know, it's a family farm, and there's people coming and going, and there's a lot of activity. And if you don't have strong controls in place about who can go where, wearing what, you know, that's when some contamination can occur. And we don't have that issue, thankfully.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and I'd say the second one, probably, you know, she can test for coliform. She can plate samples in the creamery, so she can actually exceed, you know, the Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture standards.
Right.
You know, things that are not required.
Wow. So you guys do a lot of extra testing yourselves, just to constantly monitor.
Yeah, we do, because you want to be sure you've got a clean, safe product.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And would there be a third, or do you think that those two are kind of some of the most simple and most important?
Well, I think probably the third, and I think the, you know, the rest of the family would agree that the good milking practices up at the barn on the input side are just as important as what's happening down below.
Absolutely. And so how do you guys communicate about that? Because, yeah, the whole family's involved, so that must be a pretty interesting process.
Well, family communication, I'm learning, you know, I'm not from the farm, but as I watch it, it's an interesting dynamic. So what you've got is you've got, you know, Bill, which is Emily's father, and then her brother, Zach, who also has a degree from Penn State in animal science, back doing the rotational grazing program and all that. Those three have to communicate every day. Sometimes, I guess, it's just what we'd call water cooler chat. But other times, it's stuff that's more important, such as, hey, they're changing the diet of the cattle coming up, or, you know, you're counting down the days till the cows can get back on the grass, because that changes what cheese you're going to make and with what frequency.
Mm.
So, you know.
And can you tell us a little bit about some of the cheeses that you make and how you market those?
Yeah. I think she probably started some more basic cheeses that we thought we could sell, you know, in a variety of locations, like the town and the country.
Right.
Like Gouda, Baby Gouda, that's a very popular cheese for, and cheddar. You know, it was like the first year, and we're in year five, and since then, she's added some other platforms, such as Tome. She does a Tome named Daisy, which is very nice. And then we finally got into aging our Goudas out, so we have a cave on the neighboring property, which was an old vineyard that we now age some of those cheeses in. And in the past 2 years, I think what she would say she spends the majority of her time on is a soft, ripened beauty we call Noble Road.
Woohoo! We love the Noble Road.
Yeah, it's a very finicky cheese, and when you're, you know, you're only 5 years in, I think it's probably pretty challenging for anybody. But she does a good job. Sometimes our pigs are not only whey fed, sometimes they're brie fed.
Lucky,
not too often, yeah. Thankfully.
Oh, I love it. You could start Pennsylvania brie fed pork, yeah. A whole new marketing campaign. Yeah. Well, hopefully that would be a very, very limited edition of.
Yeah, it would have to be, yes.
Yeah. And that reminds me, actually, you guys do other stuff on the farm too, don't you? Do you have a CSA and another?
Well, we don't do a CSA, like a formal CSA, but so the farm is always open for visitors. And, you know, in terms of like farmers markets, like Bill and Zach don't get out to the markets much because they're farming. But if you come to our farm, they always spend time with the customers, so that's nice. But once you come here, you can get all the cheeses. You can get grass-fed ground beef and steaks. We mentioned the pork. So what we do is we raise like 16 pigs twice a year. And we market those as whey-fed pigs because, as you ladies know, we generate a lot of whey.
Mm-hmm.
Very good protein source for the pigs.
Right.
We sell those on the Internet, actually, where we just sell deposits. People pay their deposits on the Internet, and maybe 3-4 months later, they show up at the farm and pick up their USDA butchered and ready-to-go pork.
It's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then a small one, you know, I'm going to mention it, though, because I think it contributes to healthy pastures, is raw honey. So we keep about 22 hives back in the middle of the pastures.
Wow. And so speaking of the pasture, you know, you're talking a lot about how that influences the cheeses you make and that kind of thing. What is the lay of the land of the farm? How many acres do you guys have, and how is it kind of divvied up?
Well, it's about 260 acres. But what's this? And of that 260, about 100 of it is wooded or forested,
mm-hmm.
and the rest is broken up into pastures with big concrete water tanks that we pump water from a well using solar power and send water out there so the cows can stay outside longer, especially on the hot days.
Cool.
But beyond those 260 acres, most of what surrounds our farm are old farms that are no longer in operation.
Right.
So my father-in-law, you know, he cuts hay on that property, you know, upkeeps the land, tries to take care of it for the people that, you know, maybe they're not farming anymore, but they don't want to get rid of the land and divide it up, and we like that because it keeps it in agriculture.
Right.
Absolutely. Are there any kind of strong local movements near you guys to keep farmland in farming?
Yeah, well, I think there was probably more activity on preservation a few years ago when the state coffers were more flush.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still, I think, funds out there. Our farm went into preservation in 2009, I believe.
Cool.
So it can never be subdivided or developed, and a lot of other properties have done that as well.
Well, and along with that, sorry, that's like free association. I know that, and this is kind of this is maybe an uglier part of the whole deal, but I know that a lot of farmland in Pennsylvania has been sold for that gas drilling, or for the rights below the, for the shale. Is that something that's affected farming in your area or not so much?
Well, it hasn't yet because we're in the Delaware River watershed region.
Okay.
Where there's no drilling allowed. But yeah, this area has definitely been targeted by the gas companies for development.
Wow. And what about cheesemakers kind of throughout the state? What kind of trends or changes have you noticed since you started making cheese in Pennsylvania?
Well, in general, just that there's more of them. I think I counted maybe 4 years ago on our Pennsylvania Farmstead and Artisan Cheese Alliance board, maybe we had 17 members.
Okay.
And I know there's more been added since then. What I would say, though, it seems like the majority of them are in the southeast, around the Philadelphia, Lancaster area.
Right.
And up here, like in the northeast, I probably don't know of any but us.
Wow.
You know, we've got a lot of agriculture up here, a lot of dairy, and we always looked at this as a very noble way to preserve your dairy farm by going value added.
Mm-hmm.
Because once the farms stop milking, you know, and go away, your houses go off, like the farms never come back.
Right.
Absolutely. Is that where the name of the cheese comes from? You guys are following the Noble Road? Making sure.
I'd like to say, yeah, actually Noble Road is one of the roads that borders the farm, and the Noble Farm was on that road. It's one of the ones no longer in operation. So we just try to honor that family name, you know.
Cool. Yeah. Well, we've just got a couple minutes left, but can you tell us quickly about that Pennsylvania Cheesemakers Association?
Well, I wish I could tell you more. I don't really know a lot. It hasn't been very active. It seemed like it got some legs under it about 4 years ago, and I haven't heard a lot of activity since, which is a little disappointing, because you look at some states and they're so organized and together, like, you know, Vermont always comes to mind, but even New York has a nice network now.
Yeah, yeah.
So we need to get our cheesemakers together, I think, and get them working together as well.
Yeah, and what about, do you any work or workshops or exchange of ideas through PASA, the Pennsylvania Association for Sustainable Agriculture?
Well, yeah, we're members of PASA. We love PASA. Emily, I believe maybe last year's conference or the year before, she taught spoke at the intermediate cheesemaking course. Pre-track conference, and then every year, you know, we send our products out there for if we can't make it, which we often can't with three children under the age of five.
Oh man!
but they do a fantastic job, I think, of representing the farms in this state.
Yeah, definitely.
So if people want to find your farm, how can they do it? Can you give our listeners your website so everyone can research and hopefully come visit you in the summer?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. It's quite simply calkinscreamery.com, and you spell Calkins like chalk, and it's Calkins creamery.com, and we're on Facebook, and we are right on the Delaware River in northeast PA, across from Bethel, New York.
Got to get out to see you guys. That's a hop, skip, and a jump. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much for taking time to be on the show today, Jay. And I look forward to eating some of that Noble Road this weekend. Stay with us.
Thanks for having me. We love the show, and we'll be looking forward to listening to the podcast.
Thank you.
Now this is a story all about how my life got flipped, turned upside down. And I'd like to take a minute, just sit right there. I'll tell you how I became the prince of a town called Bel Air. In West Philadelphia, born and raised, on the playground is where I spent most of my days. Chilling out, maxing, relaxing, all cool and all, shooting some b-ball outside of the school. When a couple of guys who were up to no good started making trouble in my neighborhood. I got in one little fight and my mom got scared and said, "You're moving with your auntie and uncle in Bel Air." I begged and pleaded with her day after day, but she packed my suitcase and sent me on my way. She gave me a kiss and then she gave me my ticket.
We're back on Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby. My co-host today is Sophie Schlesinger, and we are talking the state of cheese in Pennsylvania. That lovely little ditty. I have any excuse to listen to Will Smith rap about Philadelphia. So our second guest, Trent Hendricks, actually hails from a farm not far from Philadelphia. Trent, are you with us?
I am.
Thank you, Trent, so much for being on the show.
My pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
So can you tell us a little bit, is the name of your farm, the full name Hendricks Farm, or?
Hendricks Farms and Dairy, and we're in Telford, Pennsylvania, just about 40 minutes north of Philadelphia.
Great. And, what sort of things do you produce on the farm? Obviously you have a dairy, so there's cheese, but what about, other products?
We do a full line of charcuterie. We have a butcher shop, on farm as well. And, we do a lot of cured meats, a lot of retail cuts, all of our own sausage and so forth processing, in addition to both cow and goat cheese, which are milked right on site, fully farmstead.
Wow.
Wow. So how, can you tell us about the history of your farm? Was the farm in the family for a long time, or is it a more recent venture?
Well, actually, we're first generation, my wife and I and our children, and about 10 years ago, we did a career shift, and about 5 years ago, we moved to our current facility, and we started milking a family cow for children's for raw milk, and decided we wanted to take it a little further and made some cheese, and got a little fortunate at some cheese shows, and things started to go off from there.
Wow. And can you tell us a little bit about, if you don't mind sharing, kind of what you were doing before farming and what inspired you to start farming and start making cheese?
Well, I always wanted to farm, was told you couldn't do it if you weren't born into it.
Right.
And started a transportation firm hauling cattle, mostly figuring if I can't be a farmer, I'll at least be close to it. And did that for about 10 years, developed that, sold the business, and was able to see an opportunity with the raw milk cheese to create a new business profile, and made a significant paradigm shift, and here we are.
Well, that's there are so many questions right on the tip of my tongue, but the first one I feel like is relates to the transportation part. How do you see any? I don't know. I feel like distribution is the biggest problem for most small, you know, small scale cheesemakers. Do you have any thoughts about? I don't know how that needs to shift for people to actually be able to get their products to market. And do you see anybody doing interesting work in Pennsylvania with distribution?
Well, these are significant challenges, and they're only going to become more so between regulation and fuel costs. These are giant hurdles, and I believe one either needs to be very high shelf, top quality producer marketing specifically in their locality to reduce any additional costs, or they need to produce at sufficient volume to justify large shipping options, whether it be by the pallet or by the truckload.
Right.
Otherwise, that middle area is extremely uncomfortable and really stresses the margins trying to have a foot in both ponds. We were fortunate. We do the vast majority of our sales retail on farm. We do not do farmers markets. We've also shipped trailer loads of cheese to large distributors. And while that works and that's successful and there's nice margin, we felt it was not who we started out to be and what we wanted to be. So we don't do that any longer. We're fortunate that we have a very reliable, consistent, dedicated customer base. And so we're able to put our focus back into our craft, and we're very blessed that people appreciate what we're doing to the degree that we're allowed to continue doing it.
Yeah, well, that's so maybe that's a good place to switch gears and then ask about the raw milk end of things, because it seems like you are a very passionate advocate for raw milk. Can you tell us about why you believe so strongly in it, and a little bit about maybe challenges you faced being a raw milk cheesemaker?
Yeah, we're a little less vocal on our passion for raw milk, being in the industry for 10 years and getting smacked around a little bit by the state has tempered some of our missionary zeal for raw milk. However, we do believe in it just as much as ever. It's every aspect of our farm and the food we produce first for our family, and we believe in the restorative healing powers of raw food and food that has not been processed significantly. And so that was our primary motive. When we wanted raw milk for our children, we did the logical thing and went out and bought a cow. Of course, having always enjoyed, you know, a hobby level of farming, it was not a giant leap for us. But nonetheless, that is the reason we got started. And I think a lot of people today have come to appreciate low-processed or non-processed foods, and we want to encourage that, but we also feel that everybody needs to educate themselves, make their own decisions up, come to the conclusions on their own. There's a lot of people who would benefit greatly by turning off their television and picking up a book, and we encourage people not to drink raw milk because we think it's good for you. We encourage you to go out and decide for yourself whether it's the right choice. Our job is not to teach people to drink raw milk. Our job is to produce the safest, best quality, healthiest, most tasty raw milk we can. And should you decide that it's good for you, we'd love to have you come to our farm and buy it. But everybody needs to make that decision for themselves.
Now, can you recommend for our listeners any good sources for learning about raw milk, be it on the internet or books, anything that you like in that department?
Yeah, the Weston A. Price people are pretty passionate, and they've gone to great lengths to make information available. Most farms that produce raw milk would love to chat with anybody that comes to them to ask about raw milk. I think going online, there's many sources. Devil in the Milk is a good book choice. So there's a lot of options out there. 10 years ago, it was a little harder to find information. Eat Wild, another great source for raw grass-fed food choices. So there's a number of options out there today.
That's great. Well, thanks for the recommendations. I feel like that's a very common question that I get in the store, and it's always good to have some new ideas and new places to send people to learn. So how about, you said you're located pretty close to Philadelphia, and it seems like there's a lot of interesting food stuff, especially with relation to local food happening in Philly. Could you talk to us about that? Do you have any interaction with that as far as dealing with restaurants or chefs or just customers driving up from the city?
We don't get involved with the restaurants to the degree today that we used to. We do service some restaurants, but the vast majority of them come to the farm and make their own selections. We've been fortunate to be involved with some key players in the local food industry. But the last number of years, we've just really focused in on our craft, and we've been blessed to have a ready market that we've not had to go bang on doors looking for the business. We've fortunately been around long enough that we have a steady client base, and so that's been a pleasure that is not often afforded to a new business. But after surviving the challenging startup years, we're able to devote more of our attention to our craft and maintain the relationships with our customers.
And now, I think, I was thinking, you know, it's very challenging, obviously, financially and otherwise, to start a cheesemaking business. Did you guys feel anything at all from the recession in the past couple of years, or has the business kind of been very steady?
Yeah, we did have some challenges. Our price per pound cheese, we definitely hit a wall with what people were comfortable paying for routine food purchases. And, we've had to adjust. Unfortunately, being a grass-fed operation, we've had a certain level of immunity to the high commodity prices that affect a lot of traditional farms. So we've been able to offset that. We've had to grow lean and mean. We've had to understand, you know, where our true margins are and to trim the fat, cut the waste. But we've been fortunate, you know, after two challenging years, you know, we've definitely felt the pendulum swing to the other side, and we think that food buying population today has never been more educated, and we're pretty fortunate that people today, even though they've maybe reduced some of their expenditures, we have customers who have told us they've trimmed here or there or any other area so that they can maintain their diet and come out to the farm and support something they believe is important to the community. So one neat thing about natural foods, grass-fed, organic, raw milk type people is they're a pretty educated bunch, and they're pretty passionate, and they're extremely loyal. So that's something I would definitely encourage people to do that want to get into this business, is to take the time to develop and nurture the relationships with their customers.
Yeah, as a shopkeeper, I can totally identify with that. It's super, super important. Well, we have one other question that's kind of an oddball, but we thought maybe you would know. In doing some research about Pennsylvania dairy traditions, we came across a phenomenon called cup cheese. Have you heard anything about cup cheese, or do you know what it's all about?
Three words. Gag a maggot.
So
it's not your favorite.
There are folks that like it. Basically, we've never made it. We've tasted it, and I'm sure there are people who are dedicated to it, and that's wonderful. It is definitely an eclectic cheese. Doesn't taste like much. That's good. And,
What is it like? I mean, is it served in a cup? Like, what is?
The folks that we've seen consume it, put it on bread, usually white irradiated flour bread, and it drips off and runs down your chin and just tastes like rot.
Wow. Wow. All right. Well, you heard
but
it here
could
first.
That just be my opinion.
You heard it here first. Don't eat the cup cheese. No, it's actually very funny. When a customer of mine came into the store the other day and mentioned it, and she had gotten it at a food co-op here in Brooklyn, and I was stumped, and I'm not often stumped by a what's this cheese question. So thank you very much for enlightening us.
Yeah, it kind of goes along with scrapple and liverwurst.
Now, liverwurst I like. Scrapple.
You may like cup cheese then. Don't knock it till you try it.
That's true.
On our Pennsylvania road trip, we can pick up some cup cheese. Yeah. So, Trent, if people want to find out more about your farm, do you guys have a website or a way for people to find you guys?
Yeah, HendricksFarmsAndDairy.com.
HendricksFarmsAndDairy.com.
Great.
You bet.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for being on the show today. I really, it's been a very interesting experience to hear about your farm, and hope to meet you guys one of these days.
Wonderful. Don't be shy. Come out and visit anytime.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. And we will see you next Monday for another episode of Cutting the Curd on Heritage Radio Network.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. Whole Foods Market celebrates Earth Month with the Do Something Real Film Festival, a collection of six provocative, character-driven films focused on food, environmental issues, and everyday people with a greater vision. Come see one of the six features at City Cinemas Village East from Saturday, April 16th through Thursday, April 21st, every night at 6 p.m. Learn more about the films and special events at www.dosomethingreal.com. That's www.dosomethingreal.com. Sponsored by Whole Foods Market. The following message has been brought to you by Fairway Market. What's the buzz about honey? Well, those busy little bees are up to something, and it is delicious. The Fairway label honey is superb. Fairway only hires worker bees that are the best at what they do. This makes for a great-tasting, high-quality honey at an amazing value with the Fairway stamp of approval. And on top of being delicious, honey is a great substitute for other sweeteners and can even benefit your health. This includes better energy, respiratory improvements, and balanced blood sugar levels. It's a no-brainer. Get your Fairway honey today.